on today's Compassion Radio.
We live in an era of grace, but you know what? If you look at the parameters of worship, you could die doing worship wrong. And so if you don't understand God's principles, touch the ark and you got a problem.
Yeah.
In a New Testament sense, you know, we're not going to get zapped with lightning from the sky necessarily. Who knows? But that doesn't mean we shouldn't still be concerned and pursuing it as somebody who is doing something that's important.
Is worship fun or deadly serious business? Hi, friends. Bram Floria here with Compassion Radio. In the previous two programs, we began a conversation and a deep dive into the very heart of worship in the 21st century. Coming from our good friend Fred Heumann, it's more like a fire hose. And that's a very good thing. His passion is infectious for God, his people, and the holy space that we call the worship service. Fred and his team at Music Works International has taken the helm of an important work at one of the most important spiritual crossroads in the world, Kyiv, Ukraine. Each year, he teaches hundreds of new leaders from across Eastern Europe, Asia, and Africa on the incredible history and power of Christian worship, and how to utilize the new tools in our hands to bring new vigor to the worship life in modern Christian fellowships in hundreds of unique cultures. With 40 years of music missions and consulting on five continents, he's seen a thing or two. That doesn't mean he has all the answers. Far from it. What Fred has is real experience and wide-open, vibrant, and expectant faith that doesn't settle for mediocre anything. His colleagues at Ukraine Evangelical Theological Seminary are very grateful for it. We'll hear more about that work and the future of worship in our final segment today. If you missed any of the earlier segments in this series, you'll find them in the podcast section of our website, CompassionRadio.com, and through all your favorite podcast apps. Just look for our name, Compassion Radio, to see all the latest episodes. We'll start off today with a recap of Fred's take on the parable of the rich young ruler.
There's a reason that Jesus talked more about money than anything else. I think it's because of the hold that money can have over us. But also, I think there is a principle there. If anything is more important to you than that kingdom, then you're going to have a hard time getting in. I mean, if you think you've got it all in whatever you're doing, I don't care what it is. Maybe it's your ministry. Maybe it's your job. Maybe it's your neighborhood. Maybe it's your family. I mean, I know I'm speaking blasphemy in North America to say that. But if that's keeping you from this, and keeping you from acting on what you sense God's wanting you to do, you're going to have a hard time. I was blown away several years ago when a dear friend of ours in England, he had some really strong things to say about the overemphasis on the family in North America.
That's odd.
but say, all you're talking about is the family, the family, the family. His ministry, he'd experienced so many people who were called. And that doesn't mean you should ignore your family either. But just that we've come to think that it can only be expressed in a certain way, that focusing on your family means you don't go overseas. Focusing on your family means you don't answer God's call to do this, that, or the other. When God will nail the person where they're most in the way and help them move out of the way so they can get what he wants them to do done. When my good friend said that, it made me think for years. And I've kept that in the back of my head to say, what is more important than what God's called us to do? On the way, we can get sidetracked. We get stuck in a cul-de-sac rather than stopping for a moment and continuing on the way of the kingdom. I mean, you've experienced that as a parent. You want your kids to do great things, but then somebody says, well, you go and do something a little risky. You said, gee, I'm not sure. Some parents will either say, please go. We know God's in control. And other parents will say, I don't think you should do this. Yeah. That isn't necessarily only about kingdom things, but we've seen it in that particular arena.
You and I both have friends in our generation and the one right below us that are the first to respond to this maladjusted notion that to go to the mission field, you took your family over there, then you sent them away to someplace safe. You stayed doing ministry. Your kids went to someplace like Black Forest Academy up in Germany or to Rift Academy in the middle of Africa to be safe and away from all the dangers. In some ways, the devil managed to destroy a zillion families in this regard, and they didn't enter in together into a joint sense of mission and purpose. And it devastated generations of missions because of that. And we have friends that decided, no, if we're going to be called, we're all called. And even our friends over at Josiah Venture, they're based out of Czech Republic, said this is a family mission. If people are coming and God's told them to have children and he's calling them to this ministry, then they're all called and God will find a way. And we're going to find a way to support families and build strong families in the context of the cultures where they're going to move to.
Nice.
And not be separated, not be destroyed because we're afraid of what might happen to children in a foreign environment.
We're all subject to that. Please, anybody who's listening, don't think we're just pointing fingers.
No.
You know, we all have our particular areas where we choose to not trust and not be radical or not be, quote, committed, unquote. And so that's not a slam. It's worth considering. I mean, it's one thing to send them to school for a couple of years. It's another thing to send them away.
Right.
It's another thing to isolate them from it. And it probably could be more of an issue now, I would think, because you're never away from the culture you're from. I mean, it's in your pocket. It's on your screen.
And some of the worst parts of it are right
there. Well, yeah. This is a simple illustration. Another city, I'd find the local NPR station.
Yeah.
Now I just push the button on mine and listen to my Nashville NPR station. That's a simple thing, but all of a sudden, I just live in that bubble. I don't hear what's going on. Even if I'm only there for a weekend, I can still hear the national stuff, but I don't hear the local.
Of course, I would love to have all my friends in my Compassion Radio bubble and listening to the podcast every day on their favorite app. And, of course, that would be marvelous. I could speak to them all day and they hear nothing but my voice and people like you saying, this is how the kingdom works. But you and I both know they're not going to spend 24/7 with us. I want them to spend a quality half hour with us every day if they can.
Yeah.
I want even more that they see us in context of the big thing God's doing and that they're part of it.
Yeah. And in many ways, what you're doing is a sign. We are so consumed with the 24/7 news cycle. We have very few people who will look at what's there, somebody who is going to curate that so we understand what's important rather than just responding to every headline we see without understanding the background, believing just what's there from a couple of sentences. That's the service that things like Compassion Radio provide. It's like, here are prayerful things that we've thought about that we said, this is really important. You may not have heard about it. Catch this. And that gives you the opportunity to then say, oh, yeah, okay, maybe I should look that up and get more information on it. You need trusted sources.
Yeah. I'm certain I'm not the only voice people are hearing during the day. But, man, I do hope that the kind of voices our listeners hear will, block by block, stone by stone, path by path, pave the way to real truth and transformation, that their lives are going to amount to something that they're not just proud of, but that they know Jesus said, well done.
And you know, the best sign is a sign that points away from itself. Gee, what a great sign. What does that arrow mean? Oh, it means I should go in that direction, not just admire the sign. And so you can be a pointer to say, look what's happening over there. You should go here and see what's going on. And with that kind of information, you know, God can use that to soften and tenderize and speak to our hearts and to say, maybe you should be involved in this in big and small ways. You know, it's a big world and God needs people who are going to be relating to people, both in the neighborhood and in the nations, I think.
I see that you've got some faith that God's going to open up the doors for you to travel. You and I both had our second COVID shot, so we're hopeful that we'll be not just healthy ourselves, but incapable of harming anybody else by passing along the virus. That's our great hope.
Yep. Come on.
And that the herd immunity we all hear about in the news will become a reality, that we will be getting to the point where the waves of the fear, the waves of the devastation, and the waves of death would finally cease. We are praying that way. And while we long for that day, while we do the things that are right and appropriate and selfless and the way we serve the world by the way we behave in the time we're waiting, you still have faith that God's going to be able to bring you outside your four walls and step back into some things where people need you. And you're planning going back to Ukraine sometime later this year. So tell me a little about what your hope is. So we'd be praying along with you for that.
Well, we're taking a smaller team and we'll leave the end of April to start with and be there for most of May and making the connections that I talked about with these denominations, as well as endeavoring to do the conference and then praying with our local partners to say, what does this mean for the future? You know, we've got a raft of part-time students that come in two or three times a year who are already on the field, they're pastors, et cetera, throughout Central Asia. And it's like, how can we bring this perspective and not just import the Western stuff? You know, bring the best of what's out there, but what about your stuff? What about not just your music, but your worship, your prayer, your liturgy, as it were? Those are the kinds of things we're starting to plan toward. I would love to be able to plan toward focusing on this completely.
Mm.
And in this season of life, I feel like maybe this is a question you answered earlier. What else do I want to do? I feel like God's saying I need to be writing more, or at least codifying some of the things I've learned. And not just because I've learned them, but because they're worth hearing about.
I would say if God says do it, you do it, my friend. Because if he tells you to do it, it may not be like a publishing success in your generation. I mean, think about the books that have so greatly influenced 19th, 20th, and 21st century missions, like Watchman Nee, for crying out loud. The man was never a hit in his own time, and he was long dead before the world caught wind of the incredible blessing of suffering that God allowed him to endure and his remarkable ability to give testament to it, that what the power of that experience of suffering in the name of Jesus and in his place. It transformed generations of other missionaries who had never met him.
Yep.
So whatever it is that God's calling you to write, I hope you're a big seller and that you'll die with millions of dollars in followers and likes. But other than that, yeah, I do hope that beyond that, something you write that God puts in your heart is going to greatly encourage and influence the future of ministry across the world.
Well, that's very kind of you. It's more the timing of it, I think. And so it just keeps welling up and welling up, and other things take priority. And that's the challenge for any of us. And so that's something that I know that keeps coming up.
Okay. Did you finish your doctorate yet? Are you still working on it?
Don't bring that up.
I can skip it.
I've not finished it, obviously. Thank you. And in fact, as other things and family issues and other things have come up, it continues to expand and expand. I'm yet again in the coursework. Thought that was going to be done by June, and it can't be for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. So at the end of this year, I should be released to work on the final paper and get this sucker done. Maybe before I die, I'll have it.
Maybe so. But that's not going to stop your ministry in the meantime.
No, and the process, the journey is the benefit. What you learn, and as you grow and go and have the opportunity to teach what you're learning, it's a very, very good thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to being in the same room with you again someday to see you at work and see your people doing stuff.
Likewise, my friend. Thank you. I would hope so.
Final word from you. America needs to hear you say something that turns their heart toward Jesus and what he's calling us to do and to deal with and to be in times like these. You're the man for the minute. Speak to us.
I tell you what I tell my students. Rule one, it's not about you.
I heard that somewhere.
It's not about your preference. Yeah, you know, it's not original with me. But if we get ourselves outside of ourselves, we realize that when we expend ourselves in the service of others, that's when we do benefit. And it's not about the benefit, it's about the obedience. So especially in terms of music and worship, but in any area, realize, you know, lift your eyes to the sky, you know.
Yeah.
And it's not just your redemption draweth nigh. God's doing something. He wants you to be part of bringing that redemption to other people.
Friends, soon after we recorded this interview, we got word that one of the key staff members at Ukraine Evangelical Theological Seminary, named Oksana Rykonets, passed away from COVID. It was a short and valiant struggle. She left behind her husband, who is another member of the faculty, and he barely survived the disease himself, and he's still recovering from it. The entire seminary is reeling from the loss. Please remain in prayer for them as they grieve, and for Fred and his team as they grieve along with them. It reminds me that we all still face great challenges in this disease in the days and months to come, and God must be in it with us, or there's really very little reason for real hope. But with his help, we will get through this, all of us, together. We really need each other if we're going to see victory over fear and all the other enemies to a real, faithful living in this world. You, your prayers, your support, and friendship are what keeps us going. Thank you. Your courage and faithful giving keep us on the air, in the arena, standing with you to help the kingdom keep growing in the 21st century. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. We can't do this work any other way than with you. Thank you for loving us in this way. And like all good axioms, it has its corollaries, it has its follow-ons that flesh out what that means. When you say it's not about you, it doesn't end there, because the implied message is it is about something.
Yeah.
It's not about nothing.
In my context, it's about the congregation. Yeah. It's about the people you're leading. It's not about you and you getting your worship jollies. You know, that's the context for me,
right?
But we get so consumed with doing our thing that we forget about why we're there.
Okay, one last question you can help us with, practically speaking. A lot of us are still, and will be for a while, in virtual church, which is in some ways a wonderful blessing because I don't feel so isolated. I know I can actually spend time hearing great teaching and being in the congregations of a sort that I never would have even bothered to spend time to pursue, but now I do. There are some great authors that I thought, oh, yeah, they're pastors. I had to find out they're online. I've looked them up. They are. And so I've actually been watching real worship happen in the context where they teach. Our home church, as we'll be part of when we get relocated up to Idaho in this next year, getting to know the style and the message and the heart of the pastors there has been really good for us while we're looking forward to that transition in our lives.
Yeah.
How do we make the most ourselves of this time when we are all in some ways in a virtual church.
You mentioned some of the positives there. To me, the negatives are we can be, like scripture says, those who have itching ears seeking every teaching they can possibly consume, mm-hmm. and not participants, because worship is not, interestingly enough, primarily about teaching. It's about experiencing and honoring God. So the challenge is, if you're in a leadership role, to not just think, well, the people will just sit on the couch anyway. I can't ask them to do anything, so why should I waste any time? It's to say, let's all stand. Let's do this. Rather than let's sit there and change the channel to reruns of Carol Burnett or Blue Bloods or whatever we're going to watch. So it's challenging people to stay interactive. Huh. This medium is supposed to be interactive. Television at its worst is a passive medium only. Yeah. And even though it's seeing a worship service, you're seeing a worship service. Oh yeah, I watched worship this morning. Well, that says it.
Okay. So you're... suggestion here is to at least take the words seriously and ask God, okay, what does it mean to worship and not just to be present while someone else does it for me?
This is where understanding the history and tradition of the church as well as the Bible helps you realize that the church has always done things like intercessory prayer in the middle of the service. Mm. Why not have that? Rather than saving it for a special thing on a Monday night or a Wednesday night or a Thursday night or whatever, a prayer meeting or even a Sunday night as they used to have, where there wasn't always any prayer. But if you're going to pray, pray together. Pray for the people in your community. Pray for the world. Pray for our leaders. Pray for those who are sick, you know, et cetera, so that people have to get involved. Mm. So if you're leading it, you've got to challenge them to get involved. If you're watching it, get off your duff. Maybe stand and watch it. Maybe sing along. Mm. I was so impressed with my stepmom when I was with them sometime last year, and I'd been around other people who just sat and watched like it was another television program, but they watched their service and they were singing the hymns right there.
Awesome.
They were singing it like nobody's business, and they didn't care.
Yep.
Well, that's what we need to do. It's like, it's not about watching it. It's about doing it. You know, Robert Weber, who's become a mentor from heaven, you know, his greatest book was Worship is a Verb.
Yep.
So worship is not a TV show.
So get verbing.
Yeah.
It reminds me, too, that I need to be a little more brave in encouraging and exhorting people that we get to talk to, that if you're getting a la carte stuff from TV or from YouTube on Sunday mornings, and you know it's not the full course, it's not the full meal, you're not fully nourished by the things you're catching through virtual services.
Yeah.
Set the table then. Add more to it and make a plan and be interactive, not just with what they're telling you, but build the thing you know God's telling you to build where you are. If that, like you said, there's no intercessory prayer happening in the service because they don't know how to do it or get people involved where they are, maybe that's part of your mission too at home, is say, well, we got great teaching. Thank God for that. What a wonderful call to worship it was. They have a great worship band, and thank you for sharing those things. We could do something here, too, between you and I, or me and God alone. There's something more to the worship that I need to be doing right now, right here, and take it seriously, and to say, whatever it is, God, show me the way, because I want to step into that. Even though I'm away from all these familiar things, what can I do right now to finish this service, you and I, that I don't leave like I know it was half-baked and didn't quite get all the way into me. I want to know everything you have for me today.
And it takes you away from the victim cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes Sunday mornings, and it's rightly so, we need to pray for people. We need to encourage people who are hurting. That's important. But if that's all they get, it's like never sending them out, like you spoke about earlier. No, what you've got right now, you can share with somebody else. So do it.
Yeah,
I'm going to pray for you. You're not a victim. You have issues. Gosh, none of us in the room are without issues. But one of the ways you cement that in your life is to go and do something. Go and help somebody who is less fortunate than you. Be involved in their lives and not just absorbing information. And that's a big challenge in this situation. The other thing I've said, and I said this last year in our conference, our online conference, which is an interesting context, everybody wanted to have the best production. They wanted to all be Hillsong. They wanted to all be fill in the blank. And so I said, A, you don't have the technology. You don't have the talent. Don't try. Be who you are. But do it well, because that's going to reach and touch your people. It's going to equip them to reach and touch others.
Yeah,
it becomes the battle of the technology, the battle of the production. You know, I love great production.
Mm-hmm. You do.
But for me, production is a way to get people to focus on your message and not your mistakes.
Yeah,
it's not just a way to try to outdo. Gee, if I only had whatever, this big piece of equipment or that, we'd have better blah, blah, blah. Well, get it so people aren't disturbed and you can communicate. And then you're bringing what only you can bring. We don't need a technology war or copies of another church.
Yeah. When it comes to art, I feel like when I see excellence, it really enriches me.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like I'm filled up in some ways. But it's when I come to a worship service where I see people pursuing excellence, whether or not they are excellent and supreme in their skill set. When you see that pursuit that they want to give their very best to God, I'm drawn into that pursuit with them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. That's well said. You know, years ago, I had to change my focus, and I went from just with my groups or my teams. I always wanted my groups to be the best. Mm-hmm. But finally, when I had a second chance to go at it, I said, you know what? I don't care if you're the best, but you better be doing your best. Mm-hmm. And that's the pursuit of excellence kind of thing. It's like, bring your gift, continue to finally hone your gift. There's the authenticity. And it's much more authentic when you know Hazel, who's up there singing, and the cancer she's been through, and the son has gone wayward, and she's still singing about the faithfulness of God. I don't care. You know, she can sing out of tune, but I'm going to be on the floor weeping because I know it's an authentic expression of her heart.
Yeah.
And that's a different kind of art, I think. I mean, art, like you said, can inspire us and it needs to be done well. But when you know the people, when you're living in community, those heartfelt expressions can be and maybe should be more precious. I don't know. I just think there's something about that that touches you when people you know are going for it. I get really frustrated when my groups or my people or my students just say, no, that's okay. Sorry. Okay doesn't do it. Let's make it work. We can do better.
You and I both said to groups we work with, whether it's in ministry projects or whether it's in arts, this is not a volunteer opportunity.
Yep.
There is no volunteerism in the worship of the living God. There is priestly anointing.
Yeah.
And you've been given that. If you want to treat it like you're just throwing your 2 cents in or giving your donated hour of time to the Girl Scouts or something, I take exception to that. I think God deserves a little more, but I'm not going to be your judge and your arbiter either. I have to trust that God's going to inspire you and that when you're obedient to him, you will know you're being obedient.
We live in an era of grace, but you know what? If you look at the parameters of worship, you could die doing worship wrong. And so if you don't understand God's principles, you know, you touch the ark and you got a problem.
Yeah.
In a New Testament sense, you know, we're not going to get zapped with lightning from the sky necessarily. Who knows? But the faithfulness of God is such and the grace is such that we operate from the accomplished work. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't still be concerned and pursuing it as somebody who is doing something that's important, not just a weekend pursuit.
Yeah. You and I have talked a number of times about the holiness of the situation we find ourselves in and the things that we do. What makes it really holy? There's something about holiness that really is set apart. It is exceptional in some regard. In some way, God came in and imbued his character in there so much so that we know this is different than what could have been if it had just been us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we recognize that in the hearts and the lives of others. And we say, yeah. I agree with that. My soul rings like a bell when you say and when you sing and what you did there. I know God was in this and he was happy to be there. I know we could pontificate on this forever, my friend, but we got to call it quits here quickly. Now, I love hearing what you have to say from your heart, Fred. I do pray that God gives you many more years and opportunity and that he will help strip away the things that would hold you back from the things you know God is calling you to dedicate your remaining years of service and passion for the church.
Oh, I appreciate it.
May he give you freedom to do that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Although you are significantly younger than me, I guess we are the same generation, sort of, kind of. Different ends of the same generation.
Fred Heumann of Music Works International, thank you so much for sharing your life and your encouragement and the joy you have for the work you do. And we'll be praying for you as you step out the end of April into May to jumpstart training young pastors and worship leaders, evangelists, to go missionally and purposefully and joyfully to reach more people than have ever been reached before in that part of the world and to inspire others in other parts of the world that need some good mentors and examples. Thank you for doing that work, and we'll be praying for you through that time.
Thanks, Bram. I appreciate it. Really do.
I'll bring you more than a song, for a song in itself is not what you have required. You search much deeper within, through the way things appear. You're looking into my heart. I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you. It's all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've every single breath.
Remember, friends, nothing that Compassion Radio does is possible without you. If you believe hearing the good news from the front lines of faith builds your faith, then let us know today. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or make your gift through our website, CompassionRadio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today. We'll see you right here again tomorrow.